Hello, and welcome to the Send Parenting Balance podcast. My name is Katie Walker, and I talk all things parenting children with autism, ADHD, PDA, and any other associated mental health difficulties. Today's title of the podcast is My Journey with ARFID. ARFID is a avoidance and restrictive food intake disorder, and it can be linked to children that have autism. It is basically an eating disorder, and it's very complex, so we're going to unpick it. I wanted to share my own journey with ARFID with you because both of my boys have it. One of my children, 18, and the other is just 7. Both of which had it from age 18 months, so very, very early on. And being 12 years apart in age between my two boys, it does show differently in both boys, although there are some similarities. As always, autism is a spectrum, meaning all children with autism will be individual with their own strengths and their own struggles. And ARFID is no different. And this is evidenced between my two boys. They both have the same condition, but they both experience it differently. My eldest is 18 years old now. And so, in effect, I have 18 years' experience with ARFID and all the different stages of his life and how it has affected his life. The difference is that he is now old enough to fully understand his condition and be able to speak about it with others, which somehow makes it easier than guessing. I used to guess constantly when he was younger because he was unable to communicate his emotions and his feelings around food, and therefore it was very difficult to figure out what was best to do, what intervention would work. He was tiny when we discovered there was an issue with food. He weaned onto solids, soft solids, fine. Back then, 18 years ago, it was done early at around 3 to 4 months. This seems ludicrous now, looking back, to start giving soft solids to just a 3 or 4 month baby. I took pride in home cooking all of his little pots of mashed up fruit and vegetables and freezing them, and he would eat them. But at around 12 months old, he started gagging on foods before they were even in his mouth. The smell or the sight seemed to make him gag. He started pushing away foods, refusing to eat them. It seemed that by 18 months old, he had nudged so much off the list that we were only left with yogurts, hula hoops, chips, and chocolate buttons. That is all he would eat. So, between 12 months old to 18 months old, most things got nudged off the list. I remember looking back and wondering, how did this even happen? Now, back then, that is 18 years ago, ARFID was not a thing. No one knew of it. CAMHS were puzzled, and I knew of no one else that had actually ever heard of it, let alone had experience of it. Initially, the health visitor told me I was too soft on him and that he would eat when he was hungry. So, to only serve him what we were eating, things like spaghetti bolognese or roast dinner, etc. This seemed bizarre, but somehow I believed that maybe it was me. Maybe I was too soft. I was a young mum at 22 years old and he was my first baby, so maybe somehow I was doing it wrong. We tried what the health visitor said, and he would not budge. He would literally starve, then eat anything other than his safe foods. He cried for hours, and I was broken. Now, this is a really important part of ARFID. Children that struggle with ARFID don't tend to eat when they're hungry. The signals are very different, and we're going to talk about those signals a little later on in this podcast. But if you have a child that seems to just not budge, to just not eat when they're hungry, unless it's their safe foods, then that's a very big possibility that you could be looking at ARFID. He also started eating things like crayons and toys in his sleep, like sleepwalking, but to eat objects. It was so strange. He had a paediatrician and he was under CAMHS. Back then, there was no waiting list, by the way. And I was constantly being told that he had autism and PICA, PICA. And that's a condition linked to eating non-food items such as paper, crayons, clothes, etc. The link to him suffering PICA was only when he was overly anxious. I didn't know anyone that had autism back then, and I personally knew nothing about it. It was lonely, and I remember just feeling very protective. He had a dietitian that kept trying vitamin drops and protein shakes, none of which he would try. I would try the usual parenting tactics of bribing him, forcing him, begging him to eat or even try, but nothing worked. I felt like I was failing because, as his parent, I felt like if I couldn't fix it, then somehow it was my fault. I wish I could go back to that young mum and assure her that it was not her fault at all. What this meant that I was constantly looking for the problem to be fixed. My son met with CAMHS. He was under Great Ormond Street. He had an eating disorder inpatient stay at a eating disorder hospital. He had dietitians. He had private services that I had saved up for. With all of this heavy intervention, nothing changed. His eating remained the same. And this is what's really important with ARFID, something I learned in my journey. And that is we have to learn to manage it rather than try and fix it. Now, of course, in the managing, we can open up doors for trying new foods and encouraging and trying different things to eat to improve the food intake, but it's not a problem that can be fixed, just like autism is not a problem that can be fixed. So for me, his eating remained the same. He was underweight and very small for his age. He also got sick a lot. Things were much different back then, though. There was actually support. 18 years ago, he had stacks of support. CAMHS didn't really understand it, but they did understand the autism. And so I soon found a private child psychologist who specialised in ARFID in America, but she also had a clinic in Birmingham. So back then, I paid £300 to see her, and she knew my son better than I did. It was the first professional that I spoke to that actually knew ARFID as well as I did, or better than I did. I was so thankful I had seen her. It was her that told me that a level acceptance was needed from me, that my focus was not on changing his eating, but just to encourage as much food as possible, even if it was 20 packets of ready salted crisps. We had to shift our focus to look at how many calories went into his body, not what those calories were made up of. She wrote her report, and all other professionals, including the paediatrician, CAMHS, Great Ormond Street, and his dietitian, agreed with her diagnosis of ARFID and how to go about it. He was 7 years old when this happened. Finally, some clarity. As a household dealing with ARFID, this made sense. But as part of a wider society, this was proving really difficult, particularly going back all those years. Firstly, the explaining to people of his safe foods was unbearable. If professionals didn't understand back then I can assure you that schools and other mums on the playground had no idea and looked at me like I was batshit crazy, and that I was probably a lazy mum who fed him chips only. Poor little boy and terrible mother. I learned to grow a thick skin, I can assure you. Schools didn't like it. They didn't want to separate foods. They wouldn't allow him chips on fish and chip day unless he had the fish on his plate also. He only ate hula hoops and chocolate as cold foods, but the school policy was no chocolate in lunch boxes. He also hated looking different to his friends, so he refused to take a lunch box. So this meant that he basically ate nothing from 7 a.m. breakfast until 4 p.m. when he got back from school. Being that he was underweight and small for his size, this was really unhelpful. Eventually, they did offer him the ability to eat a packed lunch, but away from other children that would see that he had chocolate. He had to sit in the office with school staff, adult school staff, and this meant that other children teased him and he felt excluded from others at lunchtime. It meant that having friends to the house was a real no-go because other children ate food, and my son did not want anyone to know that he only ate chips. Even if I offered to only buy chips from the chip shop for everybody, he felt that other people might know, other children would find out. This also meant that he didn't go to other people's houses very easily because food is a very big part of going to a friend's house. Mums usually offer an after-school snack and tea at the table with a yummy pudding, all of which was very difficult for him to access. Going to birthday parties or school events was also very difficult due to the fear of food being present. It's not until you have a child with a food disorder that you soon realise that food seems to be everywhere, very important and unavoidable. So, of course, he chose to self-isolate. As he grew older at senior school, friends became more able to hang out rather than going to people's houses for tea. And so it was easier for him to access socialising away from the pressures of food. Some of the symptoms that he suffered and suffers with still are as follows. He can only eat safe foods. For him, these four foods can change slightly over time, but not in a big way. So, for example, his brand of chips may change. That would be it. He may eat the fat Aunt Bessie's chips, and then he may change to the McCain skinny chips. They are always carbohydrate, beige, and plain foods, apart from the chocolate. And the chocolate is only one brand. He will only eat Galaxy. These safe foods have to look a certain way and be prepared a certain way. Otherwise, they are not considered safe. For example, no brown on the toast, or if there's a change in packaging, or it's cooked slightly differently, for example, grilled rather than oven cooked, then it won't be accepted. The smell and presentation of these foods is really important. Otherwise, sometimes even his safe foods can make him gag. If he thinks that he will be sick, then he will be sick, if that makes sense. So it's about not making him gag or think he may be sick, because otherwise he will be. So if anyone else is cooking food in the same area as his foods, then he may be able to uneat his, unable to eat his foods. Because the smell will be different. So, for example, if I'm cooking a spaghetti bolognese for me and my daughter, but I am cooking him his chips, he may not be able to eat his chips if he gets the smell of the spaghetti bolognese, because it could make him gag and put him off his own safe food. Sometimes we would go to cafes, pubs, etc., for meals, and it was entirely dependent on the smell of these places as to whether or not we could eat there. We walked out of many venues. We ended up with a very firm few favourites that we would constantly revisit. He did not want anyone else to know in fear of being different, which affected his social world and created anxiety and isolation. It also affects his ability to take medication, vitamins, and take certain toothpastes. It's anything in his mouth. Acceptance of these foods is contextual. So, for example, at Nanny's house, he may be able to eat some chips that she made in the fryer. Yet at home, even if I cooked them in the same way, they are not Nanny's chips at Nanny's house, and so they will not be eaten. I remember at school once, he ate a rich tea biscuit, which the school staff happily used as evidence that Mum was too soft on him. And that he did eat different foods. And yet, when I bought these biscuits at home, the exact same brand, they apparently were not the same and would not be tolerated. If his safe foods were not available, then he could not easily eat. His body would not deviate into trying other things, even if he was starving. He would have very little interest in food if anxious, or even if he was excited, such as a birthday or Christmas. My younger son, age 7, has ARFID too, and there's much more knowledge and other people that suffer with ARFID to pull on for experiences and suggestions. However, there is no support, so it's done a full U-turn. So I'm having struggles with him, but in a slightly different way. Professionals and people know what it is, but there's no longer any support for it. We have no CAMHS, no dietitian, no paediatrician. The professional that we saw previously, the private professional in which I paid, no longer works with children offering assessments. Their little interest in food when anxious or excited remains the same between both of my boys. The beige, dry, plain food remains the same. Although my younger son's plain food safe list is bigger, and he will accept up to about 8 foods, and one of those foods includes chicken nuggets, which is protein. My younger son is also not underweight or small for his age because he eats much larger portions of his safe foods. With my younger son, it's still contextual though. What he eats at school will not follow through to what he may eat at home and vice versa. My younger son does not have pica. He does not eat other items such as crayons and toys. He does only eat food. My younger son also cannot take medication, vitamins, or tolerate toothpaste yet, which proves very difficult when he's unwell and trying to get his temperature under control. He does like to have his safe foods cooked a certain way, in the same packet as last time. It's really annoying when superstores put offers on packaging. Please don't put offers on packaging, guys. My ARFID children then don't take the food. They don't think it's safe. He also likes it presented in a certain way, and for him, he can't have foods touching other foods. His smell and gagging problem is actually much worse than my older son's, and he has to eat completely separately to the rest of us in a completely separate room, and he cannot stand most pubs, cafes, eating out is much more difficult. My younger son also has meltdowns in the form of huge outbursts. So if any of these ARFID conditions are wrong or just wrong on that day due to high anxiety, then it takes a lot of intervention to put it right. With both boys, what's interesting is that they are not motivated by food. They also cannot understand the internal feeling of being hungry and get to a point of being over hungry. This is due to constant food refusal if the conditions are not right. This over hungry causes dizzy, tummy pains, and feeling very empty inside and sick. And because both boys can easily go 12 hours with no food during the day, it can be really hard to encourage them to eat when they get like this. Because if they get sick due to not eating, then they're not going to eat because they feel sick. And so it's a vicious cycle. Both boys can change their safe foods, but not accept a new food. For example, they may change eating hula hoops to Froobs. For those of you that don't know, Froobs is like a tubed yogurt. But then what they do is they knock the hula hoops off the list. So we actually lose a food. Now, this can create parental anxiety because we are never sure what might be knocked off the list. For a while, my youngest son accepted grapes, and I thought, great, we've got a new food. He'll eat grapes. And they were red grapes, so it was not a beige food. But what he did is he knocked off the chicken nuggets. So, from a nutritional and a calorific point of view, this was entirely unhelpful, and I actually had to try and get him to switch back. This makes playing around with foods really tricky and can create parental anxiety. The other thing with both my ARFID boys is that they have been so sensitive to taste that hiding anything in juice was an absolute no. I tried it with my eldest a few times, and he smelt and tasted the difference both times, to the point with my eldest that he didn't trust me anymore and refused all water intake. He ended up poorly and being on a drip in hospital. However, my youngest will notice and spit it out, but he will still trust me to take juice from me the next day. So we do have to remember that every ARFID child is different. Their tolerance to different interventions and stimuli will be very different from one another. So we must try and fully understand each child in a bespoke way before considering what interventions may work or may not work. Another really important consideration is a lot of children that have ARFID have sensory processing disorder, and the two go hand in hand. Now, I've done a podcast on sensory processing disorder. Would be great for you to go over and listen to it. Because if on a day of high anxiety, the sensory processing disorder is quite high, this will mean that food intake will be more difficult. The gagging may be more difficult. And so the two go hand in hand. Because it's such a bespoke thing, this is why everything at Send Parenting Balance is aimed to be bespoke and personal, because every special needs child is different, and therefore every intervention will need to be different and completed with caution. As always, please do reach out to me at www.sendparentingbalance.com for further support or use the Contact Me page to reach out. I love to hear from you. I do hope you're kind to yourself today. See you next time.